Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Australia's most amazing gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9.
Current community affairs, the news and views you need to know. You are on the line with Dean Beck.
And a very good afternoon to you, one and all. Thursday, the 15th of January, 2015. Thank you very much for joining me on the line today. A very busy show today. We'll be speaking with Associate Professor Mark Stuve from Burnett Institute. We'll catch up on what they've been researching lately within our community and what they'll be doing at Midsummer Carnival this coming weekend. We will also see what Dolly Diamond was up to this morning. We'll chat to Jeremy Wallace. He is the founder of Echo International, an extraordinary organisation that's doing some amazing work in Burma. Ben Riley will join us from Star Observer as well. I'd like to know what's on your mind, Melbourne. Get in contact with me. This is how you do it.
Share your thoughts. Email on air at joy.org.au.
Have your say. SMS 0427 Joy 949.
Call 1300 Joy 949. And connect with your community. Joy 94.9.
Well, since AIDS 2014, Burnett Institute's had nothing on their plate. They must be pretty much cruising along these days. Associate Professor Mark Stuve joins us. Thank you very much. Easy sailing, is it now?
Yeah, thanks, Dean, for inviting me in. Yeah, plenty of time on my hands at the moment, so I'm glad to hand some over to you.
Tell me, from your point of view, the wash-up of AIDS 2014 last year, how has it... what is the legacy, as you see it, for us?
Look, I think it was a fantastic opportunity for Australia and for Melbourne in particular to host such an important meeting. I've been to the two preceding World AIDS conferences in Vienna and Washington, and certainly the quality of the conference and the quality of the event and how it was put on and how it was received by our international guests and delegates was outstanding.
Yeah, I'd have to agree that they all seemed suitably impressed.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. With the conference, with Melbourne itself, I think with the community and the community response around HIV in Australia, and I think there were a lot of learnings for other countries. We have been extremely successful in our HIV response. While numbers have increased over the last 10 years or so, we're not alone there in relation to developed countries. There were a lot of learnings to be had from people who visited Melbourne and saw our response.
You and I last spoke on World AIDS Day, December 1 last year. You gave a tremendous speech at Federation Square as part of World AIDS Day. It was a bit of a wake-up call to the community and also to the scientific sector, I would suggest.
Part of AIDS 2014 and 2014 itself was revolved around setting some very ambitious targets to end HIV, ostensibly end the epidemic, you know.
That's kind of about political engagement, isn't it? But it's you guys that have to try and make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess my talk on that day was to set some parameters around what it means to end HIV, what the 90-90-90 targets mean, they're very laudable targets and they're the type of aspirational targets we need to be reaching for. But we need to measure our success according to those targets themselves, rather than a specific focus on, you know, how many people are diagnosed, how many transmissions we believe are happening. You know, really, if we aim to have 90% of those living with HIV diagnosed, 90% of those diagnosed on treatment and 90% of those on treatment virally suppressed, they're the targets we need to focus on. And ultimately, at the end of the day, if we can reach those targets, the end game sort of takes care of itself. That was the sort of message I wanted to get across, and not to think that just by meeting those targets, we're going to have an AIDS-free generation, because, those sort of taglines are very seductive.
Well, the first of those grand plans was to halve new infections by this very year, 2015.
Yes.
I don't think we're there yet.
No. I think we've got a little way to go. So that was halving sexually transmitted HIV by 2015. No, we're not quite there yet.
Which makes the work that you do on a daily basis all the more important. The COUNT study has been going on, well, in various forms for quite some time. It's back again. Tell us about it.
We actually wound up the COUNT study in Adelaide at the carnival in Adelaide recently. So it was just, we're at all...
This was sort of the second one from a little test case a number of years prior, wasn't it?
That's right. Burnett Institute did Suck It and See back in 2008, and some of your listeners may vaguely remember back then when we were wandering around venues asking people to stick this thing in their mouth and provide us with some oral fluid to test for HIV. And
came up with some pretty strong results.
Yeah, absolutely. Quite a high, startlingly high prevalence of undiagnosed HIV of those who tested positive through the oral fluid. 30% reported to us that they were HIV negative or did not know their status.
That led to the COUNT study, which is a far more thorough study of the, but a similar technique.
Yeah, almost identical technique, and we piggybacked it onto the Gay Community Periodic Survey this year. So we visited every mainland capital city, which provides us with a much larger sample from which to draw upon, also much more representative sample, taking in all jurisdictions, and we can think a little bit more carefully about what the factors are that are associated with undiagnosed HIV, and how we might go about looking at the characteristics of those with undiagnosed HIV and what that plays into in relation to informing responses. It's also a very important indicator for our HIV prevention strategy. One of the key goals of that strategy is to reduce the prevalence of undiagnosed HIV, which I think is, if I was to single out one key element of to prevent HIV transmissions in Australia, it would be high-frequency testing and to reduce the prevalence of undiagnosed HIV.
To get everyone that has it knowing that they have it and preferably on treatment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what did the COUNT study discover?
We're still analysing the results. Our early analysis suggests a reduction in undiagnosed HIV. However, we need to be very cautious of those findings, given the different methodology that was employed.
Cautious in comparing it to the original Suck It and
Yes.
See study?
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Turned up about 30%, wasn't it?
Yep. While I don't have the final results yet prepared for public release, our data does suggest a figure lower than that. What's important here, I think, is that the methodology that we employed through Gay Community Periodic Survey has indicated this type of study is eminently feasible. Eminently acceptable amongst gay community periodic participants. The response was very positive.
One of the questions around the study was if person A did the test and was indicating that they said that they were negative and it seems that they were positive, mm-hmm. one of the big questions was, what were you going to do about it?
Yep. The interesting thing about the original study was that it was completely anonymous. Mm. So we didn't know who was undiagnosed. In this study, we gave participants the option to participate anonymously.
Do you know how many took up that
off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah.
It was a meaningful proportion, actually. I think the majority actually requested to get their results back.
Yep.
So we really provided the option to participants about how they would like to participate.
That's interesting that they would opt in to do that, and that's good to see.
Yep. Yeah. And look, you know, I was there all day last year at midsummer when we did the study. Many men, you know, said, look, you know, I've tested recently, but, you know, why not?
Yeah, sure.
You know, they were quite happy to receive the results, a free screening test. And I think that actually bodes well for outreach testing for HIV.
So those people were informed if they did come back with a positive result?
Yes. Yes, they were. And in each capital city, we organised very rapid referral processes so that people could go and get diagnostic testing same day or, you know, very soon afterwards. So we facilitated, rapid referral to diagnostic testing services.
Dr. Mark Stuve is with us. He is the Associate Professor at Burnett Institute. We'll come back and explore what they'll be up to at Midsummer 2015 right after this. Get in contact with us. Share your thoughts.
Australia's most amazing gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on the line with Dean Beck.
And we're speaking with Mark Stuve. He's the Associate Professor at Burnett Institute. He's the one that does all of the social experiments with us regarding HIV. One of them we've been talking about is the COUNT study. And just in wrapping that up, Mark, you said that it indicates that we're having less people undiagnosed. Are we talking maybe 20% instead of 30%, do you think?
You did try. we're still in the process of pooling the data together, and we'll be releasing publicly through our community partners and on the Burnett website and the website of the University of New South Wales.
I've got a feeling that no matter what that result is, it's going to hit pretty hard.
I think the benefit of this type of study, as I said, is in monitoring the success or otherwise of our response. This type of study has some utility as a one-off, but its real value, I think, is to be repeated.
So you think you'd give it a period, 2, 3, 5 years?
Yeah, three to four years, yeah. Perhaps. And that's where I was saying, you know, the method was very acceptable amongst the community. And I think really if we're going to effectively monitor our response in relation to the national HIV strategy, this type of study should be conducted every 3 to 4 years to monitor where we're going.
Frankly, though, if we were serious about getting undiagnosed people diagnosed, we would have had rapid testing a decade ago.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. If it was up to me, we would have home-based testing tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, we've still got a long way to go in this country, and yet we are the most privileged of nations. It's kind of weird. Now, Mark, the COUNT study won't be a part of this coming midsummer?
Nope. But as I said, maybe in 3 or 4 years' time, we'll be back around again, hopefully, if we can get some money to
now,
do it.
You also have been doing a study on drugs and alcohol within the community, and that's called Altered States. What's come out of that study?
Well, Altered States is actually a Commonwealth-funded program that funded a specialist GLBTI drug and alcohol service through the Victorian AIDS Council. We came on board as part of the evaluation team for that project, really around sort of process evaluation, sort of understanding how to best implement a service like this. It's something that has been kicking around for quite a while. I remember discussions back in the early 2000s during the last so-called ICE epidemic around, appropriate GLBTI community responses to drug and alcohol treatment. There are specific issues in relation to the GLBTI community, and it was felt then, and I think it's felt now, that a GLBTI-specific service for drug and alcohol treatment would be something that's beneficial. One of the great things about that project is that it was funded for 3 years out of the Commonwealth Government, and it's now resulted in the Victorian AIDS Council becoming a funded drug and alcohol agency
through a specialist provider of services.
The Victorian Department of Health. And where we're working on now, I think, with VAC is to how we move it, how we implement it into an ongoing recurrent service that's funded by government from the trial that was funded by the Commonwealth.
It would be nice to have some money to promote it so that people know about it too.
That would be good. And I think, one of the key things we need to do... Look, you can do a whole bunch of social marketing and promotion, but people need to be in the right place to seek help.
Very true.
Where I think we, potentially need to go is strengthening some of the referral processes through mainstream agencies. Often people will present directly to mainstream, but they may feel more comfortable with a referral to the VAC service or through direct line.
So that's about informing mainstream of the specialist service that VAC offers?
Informing and I guess establishing potentially some formal referral pathways.
Sure. Yep.
So, we have a statewide drug and alcohol counselling telephone service, direct line, so potentially also about strengthening the referral pathways from direct line into the service itself.
Pronto continues to grow ecumenically, I was going to say. That's probably almost appropriate. In its outreach and what its services that are doing in the community, but where's Pronto at as far as providing a full range of STI services as a clinic itself?
There are a number of funding and regulatory issues in relation to providing STI testing through Pronto, largely because of the lack of physicians on site, which was, a really deliberate part of the model was to make it, a community-based model that is led by...
Can't it be that with qualified doctors?
Yeah, our review of community-based rapid testing services internationally suggested that the majority are not physician-led, and that physician-led models tend to be very expensive, as you can imagine, in terms of staffing costs. What we've tried to work through is a suitable something that's suitable to Medicare in relation to funding and consultation costs, to have a system by which people can test for STIs while not necessarily needing to have a physician on site all the time. So there was a trial period where full STI testing was offered. I think it's likely to be a key element ongoing for Pronto.
Because ultimately the screening for STIs is a job that a nurse can do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very simple process. The process that was implemented, look, chlamydia is just pee in a pot.
Yeah.
Some of the bacterial STIs, it's just self-collection of swabs, which in a lot of high caseload GPs or a Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, people do right now. And for syphilis, Pronto's been offering rapid syphilis testing for some time now as well. The process itself is relatively simple. Where we're struggling with at the moment is some of the regulatory barriers around...
Yet again.
Out of the Commonwealth Government. Quite rightly, the reluctance of the state government to, bulk fund a whole range of STI tests that should really be funded through the Commonwealth Government, through our PBS and our taxpayers' dollars.
I'm wondering if the financial motivations of the current federal government would see an expediting of such practices not having to be engaged by a clinician, a doctor, that they will realise that it's cheaper for others to be able to collect this information, send it on to pathology, and maybe it'll happen quicker.
That would be nice. We would also like to see them at some point down the track, fund HIV rapid testing under Medicare would be a lovely...
There you go. Wouldn't that be nice instead of a research project? Yep. Speaking of rapid testing, Pronto will be at Midsummer Carnival?
Absolutely. So this is the first year at midsummer that people can...
get a little prick.
Get, a little prick in the, at the end of their finger and test, have a free HIV screening test through Pronto. So the Burnet Institute has provided a couple of vans that we use for our outreach research, and we'll have Pronto staff, your regular team of enthusiastic Pronto testers at midsummer. So if anybody is there at midsummer and would like to receive a free HIV rapid test, just seek out the VAC tent, the Burnet or Pronto tent.
Which will be side by side, is it not?
VAC and Pronto, yeah. Burnet and Pronto are right next to each other. Yeah. VAC's a little bit further down, but now, all those places can direct you to where you can get a test.
The one thing that I want to know more about is Glove Man. He will be there at Carnival 2015 this coming Sunday. Who is Glove Man?
Glove Man is the Burnet Institute's mascot, I guess, is a way to describe him.
Is it you in a latex suit?
No, someone who's slightly more buffed than me. Some of the community may remember Glove Man from the Burnet tent last year. There was a lot of enthusiasm to have photos taken with Glove Man.
Does he do interviews?
He probably would, I think.
Okay, we might get one of those.
I reckon you could do reasonably well getting Glove Man involved. So he's just, you know, he's a vehicle through which, you know, I'm not sure he'd want me to describe him as a vehicle, but he's a vehicle through which we, you know, get our key messages across around, you know, protect, prevent, and test. And he's a nice way to sort of engage with the community on a fun midsummer afternoon.
And, of course, Tex and the crew will be doing the annual periodic survey as part of the VAC tent as well.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. That's an important contribution that you can make to our community too.
Absolutely. I encourage all of those who have participated in the past and those who haven't participated in the past to do so. It really provides valuable information to inform our response.
And I'd encourage you to answer the questions honestly.
Absolutely. That would be marvellous.
Dr. Mark Stouvet, always a delight to see you. Thank you so much for joining us here in the studio and on the line today.
Thanks again, Dee.
Coming up next, we'll see what Dolly Diamond was up to this morning.
Current community affairs.
Connecting.
Uplifting.
Representing.
Informing.
Celebrating.
Empowering.
Sharing your passions.
You are on the line with Dean Beck.
Right across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming live around the world at joy.org.au. Now we'll find out what Dolly Diamond was up to this morning. She was holding up the traffic in one way, shape or form. Well, Carrie Bradshaw knew that she'd made it when she was on the side of a bus, so our very own Dolly Diamond is now featured on the side of a tram stop, a glam stop no less. Congratulations.
Oh, I'm thrilled, as you can imagine.
Now, there is a lot of conjecture about the body double that's been used for the picture where you can shove your own face in the glam stop and be instantly dragged up. It's not you, is it?
It isn't, no. No. Do you know what there is? There's more than one. There's about four, I believe. Oh. And actually, on the day of Carnival, people can get their pictures taken there as well. And hashtag glam stop. Now, I've got my own little cutout there.
Aha, uh-huh, I see. Well, you can have your very own Dolly Diamond figurine surrounding you with your face in the middle of it. Dolly, how did all this come about, and what is the relationship between you and Yarra Trams and Midsummer this year?
Well, it's a great relationship that Midsummer and Yarra Trams have had for ages, haven't they? Yarra Trams have been amazing, and I really can't emphasise that enough, because when you walk around Melbourne and you see Midsummer planted across the front of a tram, it is invaluable. I'm sure there is a figure, but it is invaluable. Valuable. And what it is that they approached me if I wanted to be their glam tram stop ambassador, and of course I said yes. I mean, why wouldn't you? You know, of course I'd love to be on trams one day, but at the moment I'm happy to be the glam stop girl.
Now, I like the pink seats. I think they're pretty special. I think we should keep those.
Yes, well, I think so as well. I mean, I think everybody's all right with pink now, aren't they? I mean, because, you know, it used to be, you know, particular colour for some people. Some didn't want to wear it. It's too gay. It's too this. Now everybody's all right with pink, aren't they?
Certainly. There are plenty of pink business shirts walking up and down this street as we speak. Now, Dolly, midsummer for you in 2015, I don't think there's a day where you've got free.
No, and why not? I mean, I've been lucky that they made me a premier event with Under a Big Top, and, you know, I've got lots of other stuff going as well, and, you know, I mean, I love Midsummer. I love it. And you wonder, perhaps next year I might have to rest, because I don't think it'll ever be as good as this one. So I'm grateful. I'm making hay while the sun is shining.
And, of course, you'll be at Carnival this weekend?
Oh, yes, I shall be launching it with John Caldwell and the Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, and Aaron Hockley, and lots of other dignitaries, I wouldn't wonder. And, of course, then a little performance a little bit later on. I work with Yarra Trams, but I shall definitely leave room in my calendar for the Joy stage as well.
Well, Dolly, ding ding to you, and may you have a wonderful Midsummer 2015.
Thank you, darling. All the best. Happy Midsummer, everyone.
Straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
You're on the line with Dean Beck. It's my pleasure to welcome an old joyster back to the airwaves. Jeremy, welcome.
Thank you so much. What a lovely introduction, a joyster. I haven't heard that one yet.
Jeremy, you were on our Fender Benders original team doing your car thing.
Correct.
You've got a background as a musician. Mm-hmm. We'd know you from the Blow Waves.
Yes.
With quite a high profile bunch.
It was, wasn't it?
It was.
A mixed bunch that were
good fun. But you've kind of taken a new direction in life. Why so?
I think it's, a collective of all those different paths that I took that led me here.
If I can get a little personal for a sec, mm-hmm. was there a breakdown to have a breakthrough? Was there a kind of a realization that you weren't getting what you wanted out of music and cars?
Or? Totally. You've kind of hit the nail on the head. Not a breakdown, many breakdowns.
Right.
I've been soul searching for I'm 28 now, so most of my 20s has been soul searching, and I guess trying to find a purpose, like many of us do. I just went a little bit hardcore on it, and I guess it's still forming now, but
sure.
This is where I've landed, founding an organisation and a non-profit organisation aiding displaced people in Southeast Asia. It's just where I ended up, you know. I mean, you can take your pick anywhere around the world, you know, the current climate that we've got. But
tell us about the trip. We'll get to the organisation a little later, but tell us about what it was that sent you overseas and in search of something.
Correct, yes. So it ended up, this is probably 18 months ago now, I packed everything up. So, I'd quit the music and quit a job, left a relationship. Left the radio station, you know. I had a perfectly good lifestyle here in Australia. For me, it wasn't enough and not enough purpose. And I sifted through lots of organisations here and different ways to volunteer and all that sort of thing, and hit a lot of brick walls.
Was it about going, did you want to go out somewhere to do something? Did you want to do that tourism volunteering thing? Or?
Absolutely not.
Right. Okay.
I wanted the real deal, I guess, but not to go out and wave a flag and be a do-gooder. I'm not saying that any of those things are bad,
sure.
but that wasn't for me. And I guess it took me a lot of homework to try and find something, which I don't. Before I left, I didn't have something lined up, but, you know, I'd made a few connections and things like that. And so I ended up in Thailand with no real direction and floated around for a couple of months. And I was, you know, I traveled the whole country. And anyway, I ended up making contact with an amazing girl who is now like a sister to me, Madhavi, who runs Kid Launch, which is just her own small operation there on the western border of Thailand, right on the border with Burma. And I spent quite a few months with her in and out of the jungle, sneaking into Burma.
So she was your eyes on the ground. She sort of knew the pathways through.
She's a connection now. I didn't know that in the beginning. Going off as a, you know,
exploring,
unqualified in anything, exploring. And I ended up just meeting her. And I think we both put ourselves through the tests while we were together.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough.
You know, she threw me out there. I learned to speak Thai.
Yep.
I learned to eat a lot of chili, among other interesting foods. Live in the jungle. Trek.
What's a gay guy doing with this Asian chick in the middle of the jungle?
That's a good question. Well, I guess, I don't know. I guess I'm maybe not your average gay guy. I don't know. And I shouldn't even say that. We can't put anybody into a category. But, yeah, I'm all about sort of some real experiences and things like that. But I think deep down it was about, you know, having a purpose here. And at least if, you know, when my time's up, that I've leaving a good legacy and done something.
What did you find when you... I was going to say cross the democratic border into Burma, but with Thailand's hardly democratic at present. What did you find when you got to Burma?
A lot of beautiful people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that it's really hard to explain, but obviously very welcoming people.
Did they wonder what the hell was this guy covered in tats doing in our little town?
Absolutely. I mean, let alone not seeing a lot of white skin in there.
Some
pretty colourful tattoos. I had a lot of people grabbing at my skin.
Oh, wow.
Also, the hair on my arms that doesn't exist
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That was quite interesting. But I guess to sum it up, it's just a bit of a place that's untouched from the outside world, absolutely. But, you know, in a real nutshell, people that don't have the opportunity to really embrace their full potential, really, I guess.
And yet, certainly on the whole, they're pretty happy.
It's
pretty challenged, but pretty happy.
Pretty happy, which does beg the question, you know, which I did ask myself, and at least I was in a position where I could get the answer to it, you know, being around the villagers and the village leaders, being, you know, being there with Darby from Kid Launch and sort of going, okay, well, why do these people need our help? But it's really about they're in a pretty dire situation where they're an ethnic minority, but... in saying that, this is Karen people. There's 7 million Karen people, you know, from Burma, that are in a situation where, you know, they've got little opportunity, I guess, and also the risk of their culture being destroyed. And I guess that's where, you know, my question to the leaders of the village, why do they want our help from the outside? And that is to preserve their own culture or their, you know, their own people, basically.
So tell us about this group of people, the Karen people in Burma. They've been fighting for their existence for decades now.
65 years, yeah. It's the longest running civil war in history, you know, and it's...
And what's a day-to-day sort of battle look like? I mean, we're not talking frontline war-type stuff all the time. It's more insidious than that.
Yeah. Look, I mean, for the people inside Burma, the Karen people inside Burma, you know, among the other ethnic minorities, I think it is a day-to-day battle. They don't know what's coming next.
But it's not what I'm trying to get at. It's not like what we see on the news with ISIS and that type of battle. It's things, people disappearing in the middle of the night. It's it's an ongoing cleansing that is by oppression rather than by two lots of people shooting at each other.
Yeah, look, I think there is some truth in that as well, but I think it is as real as what you just said. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that mainstream media doesn't cover it because...
I
think it's hard to get to, yeah, but also the sad fact is what's in Burma that anybody from the Western world wants? Nothing. really.
And rubies is the only thing.
Well, look, yeah, there is, and there's also, you know, there is some minerals and, you know, other things that they are selling off. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's a hell of a lot there, and it's a bit of a shame that mainstream media doesn't cover it. But coming back to the point is, I think their day-to-day, it is oppression, but it is what amounts to ethnic cleansing. And
so when we saw on the news 12, 18 months ago that Burma was opened up, that all things were glossy and rosy in Burma, you could go over there and have a holiday, things were a little bit behind the eight ball, but they were working at catching up. What were your thoughts?
Well, I've been into Burma the legal way as well, not just sneaking in, and I've travelled through. And it's quite similar to any tourist path that you would take. And I think it's a big... I don't think. I know it's a big smoke screen that's up, that the Burmese government has opened the doors and said, come in, you know, visit us, see our, you know, lovely country and lovely people. But
only visit these bits.
But only visit these bits. And the reality of that is and I tried to get into some of those other states, Chin State Kachin and Kayin and all these places. You can't go there.
Roadblocks?
It's just... There is no direct line of travel to get there, unless you knew someone there. But if you knew someone there, then they're putting their life in risk to get you to visit these places. So basically, I think, you know, we do lack that awareness here that, yeah, it's a big smokescreen.
We've got no idea what's going on in half the country.
No idea, yeah.
Jeremy Wallace is with us, founder of Echo International. We'll explore more of what the organisation is doing right after this.
Bringing you the best news and views.
You're with Dean Beck.
Joy 94.9.
Jeremy Wallace is with us. He is in the studio talking about Echo International, an organisation that he founded with four or five other mates. How did you get these other guys on board?
That's a little interesting background as well. They're all very dear friends, and also my brother, which is, you know, he's one of my best friends too. And it wasn't hard. I mean, once you spread the word about what's happening, people are pretty keen to get involved. I think Australia is really good with that sort of kind-hearted approach. And we've got Ryan Stevens, who is one of my dear friends who spent time with me there. Fred Porter, who was the manager of the Blow Waves as well. So if he can manage to get six interesting musicians around Europe and the UK, I think he's a real strong point of the organization too. So yeah, we've got a really interesting bunch, but yeah, we basically came together. We're just all, I don't want to say average people, because we're definitely not. We're pretty weird and
extraordinary people, I'd suggest. What do you five guys hope to do with Echo International, or what are you doing with the organization?
I think, you know, it is evolving. I mean, I didn't even know that I would have an organisation. You know, I've been back a year now. I guess we really just want to be at grassroots level, that, you know, we don't have an ego. We're not here to wave a flag that we're doing good and all the rest of it and make a name for ourselves. We really want to open up the human side of this, that it's actually as easy as just doing. We want to have a real avenue for people to get involved and not just donate. I mean, yes, please give us your money. That's great. But, you know, if you really want to be involved and be connected, we want to create that avenue. We don't want to just be another organisation asking for your money.
But is it about providing infrastructure for villages? Is it about feeding kids? Is it about inoculating kids? Is it about pens, pencils and books?
It's all of the above, really. You know, we are not constricted to one particular thing. One of our main focuses is empowerment with and education is one of the big ones. And I guess that is one of our big sort of foundations for the organisation. Kid Launch deals, which is our beneficiary, deals with education throughout a lot of Thailand, sort of through that border region. So our key focus is empowering people to be self-sustainable within their community. You know, we don't want to take people from their community. We don't want to, you know, have them as refugees in another country or anything like that. We want to try and preserve the culture and their way of living, because it is beautiful and they are happy. So it's about empowering people within the community to become sustainable.
It's also bloody political in a lot of ways, and it kind of has to be in raising awareness. There is clearly a disconnect between the freedoms that we enjoy here and what they have to endure over there. Being born into it, you don't know any different, and so what right do we have to impart our thoughts of what our society is on these others? But you can only wonder what could be if things were just a little different.
Absolutely. But we can help to make that a little different. Yeah. We assess these communities, it's inclusive with the people of the community, you know, and it's about what is important to them. And yeah, basically we're just creating opportunity where it doesn't exist. Yeah, it's really not as complicated as what you think. Yes, it is political, but it's human beings helping human beings, basically.
Jeremy Wallace, may you continue to do the excellent work through Echo International. We are happy to bring any attention that you require to the airwaves whenever you need it. Echointernational.org.au is the website. Jeremy Wallace is the founder. Thank you very much for joining us on the line.
Thank you for having me. Much appreciated.
Coming up next, we'll speak to Ben Riley from Star Observer. He has got a new print edition out. And before we go to that, though, I want to say a very big thank you to some people who've been signing up and becoming members of Joy. Adam from Carnegie, thank you very much. Robbie from St Kilda East, you are amazing. And Fran from Coburg North, three members in just the last half hour. What's that about? You can become a member of Joy 94.9. Go to joy.org.au. It's only $96 if you are a family, $72 for a full membership. Concession is just $36, and it gets cheaper and cheaper if you are under the age of 18. Ben Riley's up next, right after this. It is time for Ben Riley from Star Observer Newspapers. There is a new print edition, and like every other newspaper this week, it features Dolly Diamond on the front cover. Ben, welcome.
Dean.
Hi.
Hi.
Just a little bit rushed there and just a little bit all over the place, but we're with you and that's great.
It's always good to be with you, Dean.
I left the sheet with your phone number on it outside of the studio, so now you all know what I would did and how I stuffed up. What's on in the news today?
As you mentioned, our new edition's out, which is very exciting. It's always, you know, a bit, now that we're only doing it once a month, it's always a bit exciting when a new one comes out. As you said, Dolly Diamond's on the front. Our photographer down here, Bodie, has done some really fantastic photos. There's some great stuff inside as well as on the cover. You're in this edition, Dean.
Oh, see, if I'd had time to open it up, I would have known that. Am I? Why am I in this edition?
There's not a picture of you, but I wrote a story about the first Pride March 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's going to be the 20th one in about a few weeks' time.
It is indeed.
So it was nice, and you and I had a chat about that.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that. We did too.
There you go. Hopefully you won't open up the paper and, you know, remember that you said really awful things about everyone. I promise.
Now, of course, you'll have an outline of Carnival, no doubt.
Say that again, sorry?
What have you got featuring regarding Carnival this weekend?
Just a kind of general roundup of some of what's going to be on there. We'll be there. We've got a stall going to be handing out Star Observers, which is always fun. Carnival's pretty much my favourite event of the year.
Oh, big call.
LGBTI calendar.
Really?
Yeah, it's really fun. I feel like it's a nice, it's really kind of family friendly. Like,
you don't trip like, over the prams and the pushers and the rugrats?
Yeah, I like all that. I feel like it's the only event of the year where you genuinely see the community in all of its diversity. That kind of everyone goes.
And all of our allies are welcomed and come out in full force, which is always lovely.
Yeah, which is really wonderful. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the weather's looking slightly iffy, but hopefully it won't rain too much, if at all.
Now, each month you do a section called Closet Case, and the last few have been pretty fantastic. Who's the Closet Case this month?
We've got Becky Cole, the country music star. Now, her coming out story is already pretty kind of well known. She did it on Australian Story, basically, so it was pretty kind of high profile to do it. So we talked a bit about, I guess, about the kind of fallout from that, and you know, getting kind of letters from fans and what that's meant to her. And also, what I thought was particularly interesting, the difference between, for someone who's in the public eye, a kind of public coming out and a private coming out, which I thought was sort of fascinating, because she came out to her close friends and family about 10 years before the Australian Story episode where she came out to Australia.
Yeah, it must be challenging in that regard to be one thing personally and publicly something different.
Mm. And, you know, she said, basically said that she didn't expect how, she thought that she'd kind of done all that with the first time she came out and didn't expect it to be as liberating as it was to come out publicly to everyone on TV.
Now, on to more filthy matters, and filthy I mean politically. There's been some argy-bargy around the funding of ICE issues within our community here in Victoria.
There has. This story is a bit of a mess, to be honest. It's basically a few weeks before the election last year, the Liberal government announced funding for a whole bunch of organisations, but one of them was the AIDS Council, to do some sort of, you know, peer education type, the kind of thing the AIDS Council does around ICE youth, particularly among gay men, around HIV transmission, but for the community generally. Now, that was apparently not the government at the time said it was not an election commitment, it was just kind of government expenditure. Since that happened, the AIDS Council were asked not to spend the money. Labor have since told us that the money was never budgeted for. You know, there was no money there to spend. The Libs are saying there was. So, you know, I guess the only concrete thing you can take out of politicians yelling at each other is that at the very least there's a delay in spending in this area for the community of a few months while...
Well, thank God there's not an issue with ICE in our community.
Yeah, well, that's it. Especially not as we go into, festival season.
Yes, God forbid that we should need services to help those that are addicted to a dirty, filthy drug like that. Luckily, it's everybody else, not us. Now, Queensland Dykes on Bikes raised a bunch of money for LGBTI youth. Now, that's lovely.
Really nice story. They over the course of last year, through various kind of fundraising activities, raised $4,000, which is really a lot of money to come from a relatively small community-based organisation for a service called Open Doors, which is a youth...
Have they got that many Dykes on Bikes in Queensland?
Say that again, sorry?
Have they got that many Dykes on Bikes in Queensland? I thought Queensland government disbanded all of the bikey groups.
No, but they seem to have slipped under the radar in terms of Cameron Newman's government. Oh. Government's crackdown.
Yes, Mr. Newman's crackdown. Sorry.
But Michael escaped all that.
Yes,
probably. That's good. That's good to know.
Now, finally, there's a pub in Sydney that's closed down, and it's all because of the lockout laws.
Well, they have argued that it's all because of the lockout laws. So as listeners would probably be aware, just before Mardi Gras last year, new lockout laws were introduced to pubs in Sydney, that I think it's lockouts after 1:30 and no service alcohol after 3, which was, a lot of people got up in arms about in response to violence in the area. The Flinders Hotel, which was a gay pub and now is kind of gay-ish, I guess, closed down very recently, and thanks to the lockout laws, and now the government are doing a review of those, so who knows what's going to happen.
Well, I believe that if that pub is not the only one that's closed down, there's been so much that's closed down.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'll be there on Sunday? Star Observer will be there on Sunday?
We will be.
Very, very good. I'll be there on Sunday, no doubt. Well, Ben Riley, thank you very much for being a part of today's show. It's always a delight to speak with you. Glad we finally got you and found your phone number.
Likewise. Thanks, Dean.
My pleasure. Ben Riley there from starobserver.com.au, and the latest edition of the newspaper is out now, and you can pick that up from Joy 94.9 or from just about anywhere. Thank you very much for being with me today. I'm Dean Beck. You can follow me on Twitter at Dean Beck on Air. Until next time, keep well, take care, bye-bye.
This Joy program has a podcast, and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
Your community. Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.